It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence from Phoenix, Arizona in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, there's part of an interview I want you to hear. It was, we played on the morning show, and I found it to be of interest. And it's an interview with Jane Burgermeister that was done on Britannia Radio. And it's, you know, it's simple. We'll just do a minute or two of it. You know, it's like an hour-long video. I haven't watched it all, but it was sent to me by a good friend, and she was very disturbed by it. Because this whole control grid thing, it's not just America. I mean, this is international. There is an effort. Let's go ahead and see what we can get out of this one.
Policeman with a gun knocking on your door, accompanied by a doctor with a syringe. They haven't got the resources to do that. How actually could they enforce it if they wanted to? How could it happen? What would be the sanctions which they have?
Well, the French government released or circulated to the heads of departments an internal document of 19 pages which outlined quite clearly their method. And this is what I assume is happening in every country. They're going to set up vaccine centres that are outside hospitals and GPs. Some of these are going to be secure. People are going to be told to go there, first of their own free will, and then they're going to receive calls, whatever, telling them to appear at a certain time. And those people who do not come are going to eventually be collected and forced to go there.
Do the resources exist to actually do that? Because you're talking about transporting and enforcing and rounding up and making contact with hundreds of thousands of people. And possibly
well, absolutely. If so many people refuse, it will be impossible. But if they are assuming that the vast majority of people will either go of their free will, or when they get the call from, say, a police authority telling them to appear or the notification, they will go reluctantly, but they will still obey that call. And the number of people who will actually refuse to go and stay at home when they're informed it's a criminal offence not to go will be very small, and it will be a criminal offence not to go. However, if it turns out that hundreds of thousands and millions refuse to go, then they cannot carry it through. And that's why it's important for every single person to say no and not to go along with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was done in Vienna, Austria in September, and this is worldwide. You know, and what we had this morning, a local activist, her name's Janine Zucker, and I had become acquainted with her over a year ago. It was when they had the primary process here in Arizona. That's a long story. It's a taxpayer-funded beauty contest. It doesn't mean anything, but it was an opportunity for the Republicans to register their support for Dr. Paul. And she was very upset about, you know, she worked at one of the polling stations, and it was over 40-50% of the people that came in had to vote a provisional ballot. Because what was happening is anyone that they perceived to be a supporter of Dr. Paul, they put them on another list. And I know this because my wife did it. And I knew better. I'm not playing. But I went with her. And she got her voter registration card in the mail. She got the receipt online. She got all the information that she had registered. Oh, I'm sorry, you're not on this list. We're going to do a provisional ballot for you. Now, this is something Edward Griffin would certainly know about. He was behind the creation of black box voting. And that was of interest to me when that movie came out. that he would be involved in that. Election fraud, man. He's all over this thing. Because anyone that's involved in the truth about freedom, you know, they're going to want to know that they do have the capacity to select freedom. I mean, are you going to be able to vote your freedom? Is that an option? They put that on the ballot, do they? You know, this is whenever you do have a candidate like that, you get into problem. You know, we're going to have today. I couldn't get hold of them. We'll try and do it this week sometime. Friday, there are a couple gentlemen I want to get on. They're at work and so on. We'll work it out. We'll tape the interview if we have to. But they were instrumental in getting the ballots that were cast for Dr. Paul at the infamous Nevada convention. Now, they had them. It was obvious that Dr. Paul was going to win, and they just shut it down, turned the lights off on the convention hall. Oh, we're done. We're over. Oh, heck no. That is so not going to happen, because they did not want a single delegate to be in Dr. Paul's column going into the national convention, because there was some inter-party rules, and if you had a feud, there was all kinds of stuff that could have happened, and they were just, oh, heck no. Well, what they did is they just canceled it. They just put them all in a bag and said, done. Well, those got counted this last Friday. Here, tell Dr. Paul's delegates were the top three. So there's, you know, this is, I don't trust the system. And a lot of these young guys that came out in support of this, they got a firsthand nose to the grindstone look at this thing. Well, Janine did too. Well, now she's involved. She's down here at the workshop making different various signs, you know, to warn against the vaccine. You know, it's like, you know, educate before you vaccinate, you know, poison for profit. And we have our big skull and crossbones kind of syringes logo that we have and so on. And we'll be making a lot more tonight. You know, there's a lot of people. Some of us are going to be watching the World Series. That's just the way it is. We spend all our time today getting them ready for everybody. And they'll come in, and they'll make them tonight and tomorrow. And they just surprised everyone this morning. Oh, we're still waiting on it. We're waiting. We don't have it yet. We don't got it. We're waiting. Boom! Public school system all this week. Yep, we got them in. Line the youngins up. You know, and what they do, they do the same thing they did to me when I was a kid. 68, 69, I remember. All of a sudden, you're coming out of the classroom, and they go, oh, yeah, we're going to the cafeteria. Yeehaw, we get to go outside, man. It's almost like getting a movie. You know, these little kids, you know, we're all about third grade. What am I, like, you know, 8, 9? You know, you just go, yeah, yeehaw, we're going down to the cafeteria. And at one end, they're putting you in, and at the other end, they're coming out, and everybody's holding their arm. You're like, what the heck? You know, they're punching everybody in the arm. So you get in there, little pneumatic gun. You know, I don't remember, my parents didn't know anything. They're like, hey, yo, I remember my dad going, what the heck? Because they can. You know, we're just, and then now they have the nasal sprays. And what she was telling us, Janine was going, you know, they had these nasal sprays, and they said, well, they scale in over so much, or they, I think the word is you're scaling or something. And I'm like, what the heck does that mean? And what it is they're talking about these nasal sprays, what they're meant to do. I can't remember if that's the word, but what she was talking about is they're expecting you to go and infect other people. They want you to. It's like everybody got chicken pox. You know, and it's always, and then Jet Lacy's on the board this morning. He's been a nurse for 12 years. His wife's a nurse in an emergency room. And I had to ask a question. I just, you know, want to know. And I've asked this of Pal Gamo, senior editor at freedomsphoenix.com, freedoms with an S, phoenix.com. Our senior editor is a virologist. He's a microbiologist. He was head of the bioterrorism lab here in Phoenix, Arizona, for the Arizona Department of Health lab there. You know, I mean, right after 9/11, he's like getting all kinds of budget, get all kinds of sequencing, doing slicing up kind of stuff. So the boy's got skills. He's been doing that. That's his thing for an entire career. He retires, he comes work with us, hardcore libertarian, runs for Congress all the time, saying, man, I know from the inside this is bad. So what is the scaling thing? What are they talking about? They want that they're infecting children to infect children. And open about it. Then we look at the, you know, Drew Phillips, one of our videographers, and Jet Lacy, your board op here, they went to four locations, a couple of grocery stores, a couple of Walgreens. And Jet knows what to ask for. He's going, hey, word up. You know, where's your little sheets that go in here? Well, finally, she got access to one, you know, finally got one and went around, kept bugging them. This is a little tissue paper thing. It's like, you know, Bible paper. They, a little 2-inch square fold up comes out into a poster almost. So, you know, you look at the first paragraph. This material doesn't have all the information that you need to, you know, I'm going, whoa, whoa, whoa. Seriously? I mean, the first paragraph in bold is like, now all the stuff that you're looking for will not necessarily find it here. And the reason was, is because they change it all the time. And I'm just going, wow. And of course, it had the mercury-based, was it thimerosal or something that was in it. So I'm just going, wow, 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 wow. I mean, that's just how they see us. You know, we're like cattle. You want to know why you got a Social Security number? It's because ranchers always mark their cattle. Didn't you know that? That's how we're perceived. How are we going to fight back on this thing? Do we even need to fight? You know, what's the end game on this? Because here it comes. We'll talk about it more when we come back on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. I want to play something for you real quick. I had just enough time to get this in. This is Ron Paul on Larry King. Last night, it covered so many things. We'll talk about it after you hear this.
Concerning health care, Mr. Moore believes that universal health care is everyone's right, threatens that the Democrats will lose seats if they don't support it. What's your stand on this, Congressman?
I think it's a fallacy to say that people have a right to somebody else's services. Now, you have a right to your life, and you have a right to your liberty, and you have a right to earn a living. You ought to have a right to keep it, but you have a responsibility to take care of yourself. But you don't have a right to get something from government, because government has nothing, so government has to take it from somebody and give it to you. So it's a failed policy. It is, you know, a form of socialism, and socialism doesn't work. It leads to a big kind of
problem. If you have no money and you fall down on the street with a heart attack, you have no money, no one should take care of you? The government should not provide an ambulance or treat you?
No, but we don't have a history in this country of that happening, even before government started managing health care. I practiced medicine in both circumstances in the early 60s. We didn't have managed care, and I worked in a Catholic hospital. I made $3 an hour, and nobody was ever turned away. And there were many, many church hospitals, and you had Shriner hospitals, and a lot of free care was given. Today, even with managed care, they complain about, oh, somebody doesn't have health insurance and somebody's going to die because they don't have health insurance. But really, people don't get turned away. I mean, accidents happen. Man's imperfect. But for the most part, anybody, including anybody illegal, can go to an emergency room and they always get taken care of. They just don't get thrown out in the street.
Are you saying you like the current system?
No, I probably dislike it as much as Michael Moore does. But he's complaining about it being part of capitalism. It has nothing to do with capitalism. This is corporatism. The corporations, I agree with him. Corporations run things. The drug companies lobby us. The insurance companies lobby us. And hospital management companies lobby us. The AMA lobby us. And that's all managed care. And we have a system where money and bigness influences the government. But that's corporatism. That's not capitalism. What we want are free markets.
Okay, how do you change that?
Allow free markets to work. There's an example of free markets, and I might have even heard it on CNN today, of the example of somebody that was going to be charged $100,000 for surgery, and they went to Singapore and got it for $25,000, and the main reason they gave why they could afford to do it was that they didn't have horrendous malpractice payments to make, and there was a market. There was a market mechanism. So the patients are leaving this country. They're going to India. But that's the market working. So we have put our charity hospitals out of business. At the same time, because of inflation and management and all the mischief of government, we have pushed these prices up. Pumping money into a system doesn't improve quality. It increases prices. Look at our educational system.
Linda.
We pump in money, prices go up. The quality of education go up. The quality of medicine has not gone up by just pumping more money into it.
Lyndon Johnson once said the probable answer is that a government's going to have to be half capitalistic and half socialistic. You have to have some. Social Security is socialism. You have to take care of those who don't have. Pure capitalism can't work. Would you agree with that?
No, not really. It's sort of like I practice OBGYN. I never could tell my patient they had a touch of pregnancy. And, you know, you're either pregnant or you're not. You either have government intervention messing up the markets or you don't. You either believe in freedom and believe in voluntary choices. I mean, just look at this disaster with the swine flu vaccine. They take over the whole project. We pump in billions of dollars, and they come up with shortages. No, the distribution is lousy, and they're talking about forcing people to take them in places like New York. And who nobody's even proved that it's necessary yet. We have still a lot of deaths from ordinary flu, far surpassing swine flu. So, man, central economic planning in anything fails, and especially in medicine, it fails.
But Congressman, everyone online getting it who's getting it free is not standing there complaining about government involvement.
Yeah, but I have a daughter that practiced medicine, and I was talking to her about it, and she says, oh, yeah, Dad, I can give shots, and it's for free, but we don't have anything. So when something is free and you don't have it, it's irrelevant. And some of the people who don't want it are being forced to take it. We have lost our faith and confidence in understanding how free markets work. We turned it upside down by saying anytime corporations get benefits, we call it capitalism and freedom. And it's corporatism. It's the military-industrial complex. It's all the special interests. And this is where Michael Moore gets it all wrong. He works, he believes diligently in free markets because he believes in the First Amendment. He believes in making films. He doesn't believe in prior restraints. So why should he condemn capitalism? Right. Because he's condemning corporatism. I condemn it too. Special privileges of corporation is
maybe
a big problem.
Maybe it's semantics.
Capitalism as it's defined now has completely not only failed, well, it hasn't really failed the rich. It's actually helped them. The wealthiest 1% now have more financial wealth than the bottom 95% combined. So it's a really good system for a few people.
Hi, Ron, do you disagree with that statistic that Michael Moore just pointed out?
No, and I complain about it as much as he does, but I think I understand it differently, because when a country embarks on deficit financing and inflationism, you wipe out the middle class, and wealth is transferred from the middle class and the poor to the rich. And when we get into trouble, then the corporations, once again, who are in control, they come for their bailout, and they get the benefits, and the little people don't. So, yes, there is some truth to that, but it's the failure of the free market to exist. That is our problem. It isn't the fact that we don't have enough government. We have way too much government. The government created this monster. If he doesn't like what we have, he has to look at what we've been doing for 30 or 40 years. It's called interventionism. It's called Keynesianism. It's called inflationism. It's called big government. That's the problem.
Here's what Michael Moore said about Afghanistan. I'll ask Congressman Paul what he thinks about the war there. Watch.
Al-Qaeda has left there. They booked out of the neighborhood, Larry. They're long gone, okay? They're in Pakistan. They're in parts of Africa. They're elsewhere in the Middle East. You know, they're here in the U.S. I mean, they're a real internet operation now, as Matthew Hull, this State Department individual who resigned last month over the Afghanistan policy, you should go on online and read his letter of resignation. You'll see he explains it very clearly that if we want to deal with Al-Qaeda, the last place we need to be right now is in Afghanistan. That's just a crazy, crazy-making place. It's unwinnable. It's immoral. It's illegal. It's wrong. And what is our CIA doing paying the brother of the president of Afghanistan who's involved in this opium trade that's funding the Taliban? I mean, when does this stop?
Congressman, you're a strong critic of Iraq. Are you a critic of the Afghanistan policy as well?
Yeah, I sure am. My position is we shouldn't have gone in and we should just come home. But earlier on, Michael was saying that he was hopeful and sympathetic to what Obama was doing. I don't think he's quite willing to criticize Obama like Bush, but I am. And there have been a token effort of bringing some troops home from Iraq. Iraq is a mess, but at the same time, we're sending in contractors to replace the troops, paying them a lot more money, subsidizing the military-industrial complex, and Obama ought to be condemned for that. You can't just pick out. So anytime you support Obama in any of those policies, they're bombing bombing Pakistan right now, killing civilians. And we're on the verge now of attacking or at least putting on more sanctions on Iran, which will lead to hostilities if we're not careful, because we're talking about the Iranians just like we used to talk about the Iraqis, putting on tougher and tougher sanctions, making the people suffer, hoping the people are going to overthrow their leaders, not realizing the tougher the sanctions you put on the people, so, the more you drive them into supporting their leaders.
So you would get out of Afghanistan and Iraq post-haste?
I would. My saying during the campaign was, we just marched in, we can just march home. There's nothing good can come of it. And it's an undeclared war. It's an immoral war. We don't have any money. The longer we're there, the worse it's going to get. And we just need to come home. We can't nation build. And besides, I will win this argument because we are bankrupt and we can't afford it. So it's going to end badly if we don't come to our senses and just say, let's quit this militarism around the world. I mean, we're in 130 countries, 700 bases.
It's going to end badly. We can pretty much count on that. But it is going to end for the ship of state. We'll see what happens to us when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey, you're back on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, and I want to make sure you know something. Last night, we came back, my wife and I, we spend our weekend, you know, we're real busy all week, and on the weekend, we try and spend as much time as we can with our children and family and friends, and we finally get done. You know, we got taping at home, we know we got this, where you got 60 minutes on CBS, We know we come home, we get all set. Last thing we do, we'll take 10, 15 minutes to watch the segment on H1N1 vaccine by 60 minutes. Now, this was of interest to me because I wanted to know if they were going to even mention how they screwed us in 76. In 1970, and they mentioned it, oh, well, it was all messed up then. You know, we're not going to make all those same mistakes this time, right? Oh, no. Heaven's Murgatroyd. We'd never do that. You know, now it's all good. Because what happened in 1976, they had the President Ford is going around and, you know, they look and here I am. I go, oh, got my shot. Just like they're doing, you know, Michelle and Barack Obama sacrificing their children to the vaccine god. And we have what happened back then. Well, you assume it could have been saline for all you know. But what happened was, is in 76, they did the same thing. And Dr. Paul was alluding to that because he became a doctor. I mean, I'm sorry, a congressman in 76, right, at this time. And he and another doctor are like, really? I mean, come on. You know, this is all crap. So what happened was, in 76, they did the same thing, amped it all up. Oh, my goodness, swine flu. You're going to die. You're going to die. You're going to die. You're going to die. Everybody gets a shot. All of a sudden, they have a new disease. You know, I can't remember what they call it. But, you know, I mean, there are side effects. Okay. You know, was that in the little pamphlet? No. We're looking at it this morning. You know, and of course it has mercury in there and all this other stuff. And I'm going, and what's the number one target? You know, they want to get, oh, we got to hurry up. We got to get the pregnant women first. We want to make sure we get an entire generation of pregnant women, you know, some mercury in their babies before they're even born. I mean, seriously? I mean, where is this some kind of psyop or something? So we went ahead and put, if you go on the Freedom's Phoenix, you'll see up top and it'll say, 28 days later with a biohazard red logo, you know, and it's referencing some movie, but it gives you a biohazard thing so you know where to find it. And it's H1N1 vaccine on 60 Minutes. Now, if you click to it, you got the November 1st, 2009 version, and then there's the one from 1979, which is 3 years after they hyped it in 76. In 1979, 60 Minutes comes out and says, well, sorry, oops. You know, and they did interviews with the guys at the CDC. They did interviews with Congress people. They did interviews with doctors and all this kind of stuff. Well, it was amped up. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it wasn't really as bad as we thought. And of course, the guy that was head of the Center for Disease Control, where's he? He's working for some private pharmaceutical company or something. I, you know, I'm just going, wow, man, you guys, and your credibility is what? It's non-existent. So they give in one last night, they gave a little passing reference to what happened in 76. And only to say that, yeah, all the stuff and the conspiracy theories out there and all, you know, don't worry about it. It's not a problem now. Well, think about this. A week ago, last Friday, Obama declares national emergency. You know, a lot of the stuff that kicks a lot of things in gear, things are happening. You know, they wait. Okay, it's a week later. We got 60 minutes. You know, they're pushing it. You know, and then what happens all of a sudden Friday, we have people, activists are constantly calling the schools. When are you getting your vaccine? When are you going to start pushing? Because we want to know. We've been making signs for weeks. We're just building up. Boom! It's going to flood Phoenix because we did a bunch of them. You know, we got our news coverage. They know we're here. We want to, you know, oh, it's going to be, oh, it's on. It'll be everywhere. We want to make sure everybody knows. You know, educate before you vaccinate. You know, be the letter B, a 4, and a U. Educate before you vaccinate with our little skull and crossbones logo. You know, take a look. There's somebody out here saying, look, something's wrong. You know, this is not right what they're doing. There is little threat. So then you have places like in Europe, you know, formerly Russia, I don't know, was it Ukraine or something? I didn't pay attention. All of a sudden, they got a bunch of people. Oh, man, there's a lot of people sick. Oh, man, it's bad. You know, dying. You know, bring out your dead. Bringing out the wagons. You know, but you don't know what's going on. I mean, I look at what's going on here. You know, are we going to start having problems because of the vaccinations? Because they're saying you're scaling or whatever it was they called it, shedding. You're shedding the virus. You know, shedding. What the heck is that? You know, they want you to get other people sick. They want to expose. It's like, you know, we're going to infect these kids with small chicken pox and, you know, send them out through the school. They want to. It's like a good thing. It's part of their literature at the CDC. That's what Jeanine Zucker was talking about this morning. And the reason she was so adamant about this is because she, you know, bought into it. In 76, she was in the healthcare field, and she lives up in Cave Creek, you know, a nice area north of Phoenix up here. And she took the vaccine. 4 days later, they found her on her apartment floor. Her brain swelled, and she was in a bad way. The arm where she had the vaccination was black, you know, a stripe all the way from her elbow to her shoulder. You know, it had a major effect on her, and she didn't want to take it, and they coerced her into doing it. And so the thing is this a rare occurrence? You know, my thing is, that's not the point. It's, you know, rare or not, I don't, the whole purpose is what we were talking about with Edward Griffin in the first hour. What's the purpose of government? And that's one thing he's saying, look, we really need to study that. We need to make sure that we know what is the proper role of government. Until we can articulate that stuff, that to ourselves and to others, you know, we're just kind of talking past each other. It's not there to do something for me. That's what Dr. Paul is trying to make clear on Larry King. You have Michael Moore, the far left and the hardcore top of the pyramid libertarian, you know, kind of, you know, looking at both sides going, they both suck, you know, because they embrace one single idea. There should be power to tell people what to do as long as you do what I tell you. Well, Dr. Paul's like, yeah, man, can we do this freedom thing? You know, so it's lost on Larry King. He's like, yeah, but you got to have, you know, the power to govern. You know, Edward Griffin was saying this. He's going, yeah, you know, when you start, instead of being a protectorate, instead of being a defender of individual rights, when you start getting into the, you know, the word govern, government, you know, you already lost the battle. Well, of course, what do you think a government's going to do? It's going to govern. That's what it's going to do. I don't want to be socially and economically engineered. And I'm just thinking, so far, I can't think of a government that you can institute that's going to stay in the box. So you'll not hear me advocating for any of that. I mean, any. But, I mean, if you're going to have it, I go, all right, look, you know, I'm not going to fall on my sword, you know, for you having a government that's just there protecting my rights. You know, my beer remains firmly in my hand as I'm sitting on the sofa watching football. Yeah, because that's where I want to be. That's where I want to be. So you want to make sure that everybody understands that I'm not looking to just do away with government just for the grins of it. I'm doing away with coercive government. The government that would use force. Because what they'll say was, well, of course, you you can't have a government that's not coercive. Well, I'm like, you kind of answered my question. You know, can you have a government that's not coercive? I mean, if you can't, then I vote none. You know, do I really feel that much more protected that I have a government that's going to protect me from these other evil governments that's not coming over and bugging me? You know, I don't see Al-Qaeda, at my front door, trying to force a syringe in me. You see what I mean? I mean, it's just, you got to fight the battle that's in front of you. And here, we'll get into it as time passes. We get in this election cycle because there's a guy named Rich Davis that's running in where I live, my state legislative district here for a state senator. We have 30 districts in the state, and you have two representatives and one senator for each district. So that makes 90 legislators. You have 60 House representatives and 30 senators. So he's running for the Senate position. He comes from Washington. He's proud on his page, man. He's all proud about how President George W. Bush, selected him to be on the Committee of the Homeland Security Task Terrorism, blah, blah, blah. And, he's got pictures of him and Tom Ridge and so on, Save America. And then we put on, we sent him copies of the show. We gave him voicemails, sent him emails. He's not going to come on. And a lot of the legislators that he's worked with that I've had on the air before, I go tell him, I let him have his say. Come on, man, be all good. No, it's not going to happen. I know this. I had the Arizona Director of Homeland Security liaison from Governor Napolitano while she was governor before she became a head Gestapo person. And he was under Ridge or Chertoff at the time, a guy named Frank Navarrete. Had him on the show. But this Rich Davis knew why. Because he represents the complex that makes the money off of it. He's a consultant inside the machine, that kind of thing. And he left the... did a YouTube at a fundraiser that we played part of it. And what'd he say? That he's there to protect us from Al-Qaeda, Hamas, or Hezbollah, or wherever it was, and some Asian one I never even heard of before. I'm like, seriously? They're going to use that as rhetoric in this election? Wow, we're so screwed. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, the show must go on here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Beautiful Studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. It is a tool for you to use. Have you shared the site with your friends and neighbors, people that you love? You should. It gives you a perspective on what's coming. The end is nigh, but it's not all negative. I mean, I'll spend my weekends there just, going around searching the internet for places that, I've come to rely on to give me the technological advances that we have that, might be what's going to save our butts. Because what's the one thing that, has always been the focus for exploration, for expansion of the human species around the planet? It's going to be around the universe. It's going to be, government control, oppression, persecution. It'll put a whole family on a ship to send them out in the rough seas, unknown world with the sea serpents. I mean, we're going across the Lone Prairie in our Conestoga wagon. We're going in the Indian, Native American infested Indian territory, kind of, what the heck. We're going to go in the wilds of Australia, Africa, whatever it takes for us. We're going to cross the Bering Strait in our seal skins to get to somewhere else. Why? Why? Because the desire to expand, to be left alone, to be free, is fundamental. It is inherent in our species. And we're going to go to space. There's no getting around it. And I don't know when, soon. It's already started. Spaceship One, Spaceship Two. The Genesis projects. There's two space stations in orbit right now for the past year and a half. You don't even know about it. You hear about every shuttle delay, but you don't know about it. Go to Google. Type in Genesis 1, Genesis 2. Space stations, private, been in orbit, year and a half. We've been reporting on it. Spaceship 1, Spaceship 2. They're going to be doing space tourism. And who's funding it? Richard Branson of Virgin Galactic. Virgin Airlines, Virgin Records. Now Virgin Galactic is what this is called. Heck, The main ship, the first ship, is named after his mother, Eve. She used to be airline stewardess. Got her picture on the front. Woo-hoo. You know, and you hear about this when? When do they tell you this stuff? You hear about every weather delay for the shuttle, you know, excursion, but you won't hear anything about this stuff. Why? Because they're stripping you of your imagination. They don't want you to even imagine what it's like without them. I'll give you an example. On the front of Freedom's Phoenix today, you'll see an article about the largest cruise ship squeezes under Danish bridge. And they're talking about this large ship. I mean, it's a Danish ship, and it's called the Oasis of the Seas. And it's 20 stories high. You know, a lot of people don't know. It's five times the size of the Titanic. Huge, huge. There's another one called the World Suite. Now, I remember it was about, probably 4 years ago, we started looking at this stuff. And the reason was we were very interested because the World one, it's a floating condominium. I mean, you actually purchase homes. You know, you live in a condo. They even, on this other one, they have the large cruise ship. They have five neighborhoods. You know, this is, but where do you go? I mean, what do you do? It's five times larger than the Titanic. It costs $1.5 billion to build. Heck, it's got 2,700 cabins, can accommodate 6,300 passengers. 2,100 crew members are on this thing. Governed by what? Think about it. There was a thing they called Oceania, and it was a floating city that they wanted to do out off the coast of Panama. So they'd be in the shipping lanes and so on. One of these big ships would be going there. It'd be another floating city. And the concept had to be discussed by the people that were funding. There were libertarians at the time. They were in the early 90s. About 15 years ago, I remember this is a big deal, and they printed up the laws in the Constitution. The Constitution was twice as thick as the laws. You know, the laws are like half an inch thick, and the Constitution is about an inch and a half thick. It was all the thou shalt not, and all the things government's not going to do. You know, it's very restrictive. They wanted to be very detailed because we understood. So how do you address things like murder? You know, it's a crimes against the state. You know, what happens if he doesn't have any children? What happens if nobody liked him? You know, what if nobody's complaining? Yeah, he's dead. You know, kick him over the side. Let the sharks get him. You know, what happens when you have no government? You know, there's books been written about this, you know, for decades, hundreds of years. I mean, there's all kinds of thought processes going on this. And it was, I tell you one that I really liked a lot. It was called The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. By Robert Heinlein. And then there's Hogan that writes a lot of great books. I'm a big Hogan fan. And Hogan wrote Voyage from Yesteryear, and it's about robots that go and colonize another world, another star system. It takes them decades to get there, and they took embryos. So that, you know, the children that grew up, you know, were raised the first generation by these computers. And so they created a society that was just based on, I don't know, logic and reason or something. They didn't know any better. And, you know, kind of it's weird how it evolved. But then all of a sudden, Earth, they get a little faster ships. They're wanting to go out and claim their territory and say, hey, you know, we sent you. It's ours. You were always our. You were our property. And they were like, really? And it was very interesting. You have to go to science fiction to have these things thought out. What happens when you have a society that, you know, it's not based on Western Christian, Judeo-Christian morality, you know, where you have multiple wives, you have, you know, multiple husbands and wives, you have large families, you know, a lot of times the circumstances would require it. You know, the moon is a harsh mistress. They had many different kinds of marriages in there. And what happened is the moon was a penal colony like Australia was. But once you're on the moon, you know, after a while, I mean, you can't go back to Earth. You know, your body becomes accustomed to the lighter gravity, and you'll die. So what do? They just leave them there. They start farming inside the rock. They start, you know, finding water there. They're growing different things. They're using rail drivers, you know, these cargo tubes that they're shipping back to Earth and blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is, eventually they get, over a period of hundreds of years, they get such a society that they're like, you know what, we're free. We don't want to be under your control anymore. Oh, yeah? And they go, yeah, we're at the top of the gravity well. We can throw rocks at you all day. You know? So then, you know, that comes in. What kind of government do you have then? Based on what? I mean, there's a lot of the simple little things, you know? Like, now one of the concepts they had, if you can't get three-quarters of the people, you know, to support a law, then why have it? It's not going to be popular. So you had to have a supermajority, three-quarters to be able, 75% to be able to pass anything into law. It better be that popular if you're going to be making, you know, using force. And then to repeal it, you only needed a third. If a third of the people finally get to the point where they don't like it, it's not going to work anyway. So you might as well, you know, well, one-third people can repeal it. So, you know, it's just, you know, just these simple concepts. You know, is that, are they trying to have a better government? Is that what they want? Is that what they want here? Are they trying to get what the people want? Are they trying to, you know, provide a better service to their constituents or something? No, it's about control. It's about making you. It's about socially and economically engineering you to do whatever your masses say. So here you have these ships that just imagine, you know, with technology, materials, a little, all of a sudden we got zero-point energy or we have a lot lighter materials or better. I mean, sooner or later, you can just imagine these ships all of a sudden being in orbit. What's the difference? They're on the ocean now. It wasn't until last decade that they started trying to claim every single thing that came up above the ocean surface. I mean, it was a piece of land, boom, it had to belong to somebody. Well, now they're starting to get even below the surface because there's big, giant, open expanses of areas that you can build cities with pylons out in the ocean, you know, down by Fiji, you know, south of the Cayman Islands. You got hundreds of square miles of land that's underneath the ocean at an average of 40 feet. You know, you can build plenty of stuff on there. Pylons, they do that all the time in coastal areas. So they're going, yeah, no, we don't, you know, we got to, they be out of our control. Can't have that. Why? It's a sickness. They, you know, it's like a Puritan thing. Somebody somewhere is having fun. We got to go stop them. Somebody somewhere is being free. We got to go stop them. So think about, this has already happened. You think it's not happening. It already is. $1.5 billion ship selling 2,700 cabins to accommodate the rich, of course. And it's not the only ship. There's a bunch of them. And they're doing it to get away. From what? From control. So what do? No, I'm sorry. You're not allowed to be out in the open ocean. You got to flag it somewhere. Where do you flag it? Who's going to protect you? Then are you allowed? Okay, we'll protect ourselves. We got this many people. We need to have what? Our own cannons, our own missiles, our own subs, our own nukes, our own. You see my point? It could have its own accompanying submarines with their own little SEAL teams. You got a $1.5 billion investment there somewhere. What are you going to do? Let little Somali pirates come on and take it? You see my point? These questions are being asked and answered right now. It's inevitable. And we're going to space. And it's going to happen in my lifetime. Sure as heck in my kids and my grandkids. It's just technology. That's where we're going. What happens when they get outside the influence of any government? Will they be allowed to? Or will government follow them into space? I say you can't hear the government scream in space. Nope, we're going to space and the government's not invited. What, is it not big enough for us to get away? Start thinking about it because here it comes. And maybe we'll be able to eke out a little bit of freedom here. But you gotta want it first. You think about it some more. We'll be back tomorrow.